from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
As you may have guessed, Ryan is alive and well. He is again the co-host of the show. It turns out that my internet has finally given me some degree of workability, and so I've asked Ryan to come back and do a show. Are you excited to be back, Ryan?
I'm very excited. I'm just excited to hear from you. I mean, being down in the Dominican Republic, it's so far away, and I was just worried that you'd been... swallowed up or something like that in some big black hole.
Well, I was almost swallowed up by gigantic waves as I have recently tried my hand at surfing. This is the first time I've actually done anything that is really physical. And I haven't been doing too badly, actually. I took some classes and I've rode a few waves, man. I'm one of those quintessential world travelers now who goes to countries and usurps their luxuries and their riches and surfs while everybody else starves to death. So I'm one of those terrible people out there.
You're getting to live high on the hog in lands like that?
Well, surprisingly, yeah, you do. It's kind of disturbing. Like, the whole thing about this country, this is the part that maybe freaked me out a little bit, is there's such a huge disparity between the rich and the poor, right? You're driving along, and you will see, I swear to you, these glorious drug villas, and not 3 seconds away, you will see huts. The most crooked huts you've ever seen in your life, built with, like, spare wood and just stinking of rot just beside each other, and you're like, wow, I truly feel the corruption of this place, and I'm part of it. I'm gloriously part of it.
Awesome. Sounds sounds uplifting.
It is very uplifting. Today on the show, we're going to be talking about two things in particular. One, we're going to be talking about the Catholic Church in Spain and their complacency in kidnapping babies. Yes, I know, it sounds like more craziness. And we'll also be talking about Al-Qaeda releasing a woman's magazine. But before we start the show, I don't know if many of you recall, a few shows ago, I was talking about a fan who had sent me a letter, and I didn't want to read it, and I said that the letter was sycophantic, which maybe was kind of a harsh thing to say, because the person in question emailed me back and said, why do you think the letter was sycophantic? And they were quite upset from it, and they were like, it's not sycophantic, so please read it. And I decided that I was going to start the show by actually talking about it. But even before that, there is one thing I sort of do want to mention quickly out there. For some of you that are wondering, what is going on? Where are our bonus shows? Why are the shows so late? And so on and so forth. And I really have to reiterate that if you haven't been to the site, I've tried to explain this a few times, but the internet here in the Dominican Republic is so balls, and I mean that sometimes I can't even go on for days. This is something that I had not planned for, though fortunately for everybody else, my adventure is about to end in 9 days. I'm returning to Canada, and we are returning to a regular schedule and regular hosts. So, Ryan, you're going to have your hands full again helping me with bonus shows. I hope you enjoyed your vacation away from actually doing them. Do you feel like, less incensed? Do you feel less like an angry atheist since you haven't been doing the show?
I still read the news, so, you know, with all the crazy stuff that religious people are always up to, you know, you always keep the hate there a little bit. So I feel like I'm still revved up and ready to go. I feel like a backup goaltender that's been sitting around while another goalie's been on a hot streak, and I'm just like, put me in, coach. I could do it.
Yeah, we're going to find out if you can or not. We're going to find out. If you still got a bitch, we're going to find that out. Okay, so let me read the letter that was sent, and I'll explain to you why I hate reading letter. Well, not hate reading, but why I refuse to read any letter online that is that praises me. Okay? So I'll start with a letter, and I think you guys are going to understand why. So the letter begins, I hope this letter finds you in good health and spirits. I love your show and fully admit to being a crack addict for the Good Atheist, and no 10-step program will break this addiction. I'm writing for a couple of reasons. One, I want you to know that even though you may not be making a ton of money off this endeavor, what you and others are like you are doing is immensely important. You're fighting on the side of reason against the forces of superstitious dogma and Bronze Age traditions that threatens the progress and existence of mankind. Don't underestimate the importance of and impact of what you do has on tens of thousands of people. You and others like the Atheist Experience, Ask an Atheist, The Thinking Atheist, Iron Chariots, Reasonable Doubts, and all are at the forefront in the battle over reason. And what you do is just as important, if not far more important, than Hitchens, Dawkins, Dennett, and Harris. You guys are ordinary folk without a bunch of letters and credentials, and that's exactly what we need. A lot of people, even in our community, think that you have to have credentials to spread the gospel of reason and skepticism. You don't need any of that stuff. You merely need the faculties that millions of years of evolution gave you. In your older age, Jake, you'll look back and have the satisfaction of knowing that you made a difference. The tide is turning, and all because of people like you who are spreading the gospel of reason. So this is the letter, or this is the part of the letter that I was, let's say, reticent to read out loud. And although it might not be sort of immediately obvious, like, why would you hesitate to read a letter that's obviously saying, hey, Jake, you did a good job, I think it's important to understand that there is one major reason why I hate reading letters that say, Jacob, you're doing a good job, or I love the show, or this is awesome, blah, blah, blah. It's because, number one, I'm highly arrogant, as everybody who listens to the show knows. And if I read those all the time, you're going to be convinced of that arrogance even more so. Like, I won't even be able to joke about it anymore.
We can make it a whole segment, Why Jake is Awesome.
Yeah, I don't want to do that segment.
And it'll slowly take over the rest of the show.
Yeah, there'll be no part of atheism. It'll just be like, welcome to another episode of Jacob is Awesome. On today's show, we'll be talking from older letters, because we don't receive any new ones, about why I rock. But the second reason is actually because, as many of you know, we have a bonus show that we ask people to pay for. And it's not free. Right, it's $20 a year that we ask for, people for, and I feel that if I give myself endless praise, I'm less likely to get people to pay for the show. This might sound counterintuitive, but it's something I call reciprocity theory. And basically, what reciprocity theory is that you've probably noticed yourself do this. Like, have you ever noticed that if someone is constantly giving you something, even if it's small things, you feel a need to repay them back? Have you ever kind of experienced this yourself, Ryan?
Sure. I guess, like, are we talking about the, does a too-kind girlfriend apply? Like, one of those girlfriends they end up walking all over because they're just too damn nice? Is that what we're talking about, or is it something different?
No, it's something a little bit different. I'll give you an example. Most of the people who have paid for the show, they've admitted that they probably listened for about a year. I found the average to be about 365 days before one person eventually decides, you know what, I've been listening to the show for this long, and I feel compelled to now become a bonus member. And it's not a coincidence. It is not a coincidence. It is just because over time, right, the more that we give, the more that people are able to take from the site, even if it's small amounts, and even if it's just all free, eventually you will feel compelled to buy. I mean, one of the tricks that companies do is they'll often try to offer you free products, right? They'll say, okay, well, if you buy this, you get this free. Or casinos, for instance, what they do is if you walk into a casino in Vegas or Reno, they give you chips if you have, like, an ID card or something like that. And the idea is not only will you go out and lose these chips because the house always wins, but you might even feel a slight need to buy chips because you received so many of them for free. And that's the weird thing about reciprocity, though, is because it does tend to kind of have a very delicate balance. If I start taking a lot of praise and being like, oh, I am awesome, and have the whole Jacob is Awesome show, then I believe, and I might be wrong, but I believe that over time I'll actually have fewer people that are interested in becoming bonus members because they're like, well, you don't need money. You're getting a lot of praise, and that's good enough for you.
So is your theory basically we have to stay as wretched and pathetic sounding as possible in order to get people to throw some coins our way?
No, nobody said we have to be pathetic. The only thing is that we can't be cashing in our goodwill by just merely taking and appreciating the praise. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
It sounds ludicrous or even sort of like slightly manipulative, which it probably is, but I don't know. I don't even want to take chances. I might be completely wrong. Somebody might tell me that I would actually get more bonus members if I constantly told people how awesome we are and how much people appreciate it. But at the same time, even beyond this whole reciprocity theory, there is a part of me that is slightly embarrassed by praise. I know, again, that sounds almost unimaginable for a person as egotistical as me, but I'm more pretend egotistical than really egotistical. I mean, a dude like L. Ron Hubbard, that man was egotistical. That man took praise from people who thought that he was a god, and he took it. He was just like, of course I am. And it takes a lot of cojones to be able to take that level of praise. Eventually, I mean, this may be the personal reciprocity theory, is that I feel that all the praise that I'm given, I am not equal to, and then I start second-guessing myself, and then doubting myself, and then it's all bad. Does that make any sense, or am I still crazy?
Slightly crazy. Slightly crazy.
Yeah. Now, you know, the one thing I've been doing, since the internet has been a little bit down, and I haven't been able to do a lot of research, this is the really frustrating thing. I didn't realize this at the time, but a significant portion of my time when I was in Montreal was just basically doing research. You know, kind of like when you go on Wikipedia and you're just like hyperlinking. You know what I mean? Like when you go somewhere, you're like, oh, I don't know what this is, and you endlessly find yourself browsing from topic to topic. This is something I have not been able to do the entire time that I've been in the Dominican Republic. And the one thing that I've replaced this with is reading. Hopefully, in the coming months, I'm going to be actually adding a new section to Good Atheist about book reviews. So books that I've been reading and books that I think other people should read. Like I've just finished reading one book called Barefaced Messiah, which is about L. Ron Hubbard, so hopefully we'll be doing that show relatively soon. I actually want it to be the next bonus show, just because I'm a jerk, and I want to keep it behind a patron wall. But these types of books, I'm going to be actually doing reviews so that people know, you know, is this a good book? Should I invest in it? And so on and so forth. So hopefully that'll be coming soon. But, I mean, I've got nothing but time to read now. And I feel like as if this is probably something I should be doing a long time ago. Because, fuck, man, when you are in the atheist scene, do you not feel, I mean, you must feel this, do you not feel wholly inadequate and uneducated in almost everything? Do you feel like you just never know enough?
I remember when we went to the atheist conference to open it up with that ridiculous talk that we did. And then we ended up falling in with, who is it, with P.Z. Myers and that guy who has a doctorate in, like, what kind of evolution?
Entangled Bank or something like that. Anyways, he has a blog also on evolution and stuff like that. And, well, you remember because he was sitting down with me and we were having a debate about, what was it specifically? Oh, well, just intelligent and creationism, that kind of stuff. So he was grilling me pretty hardcore. And I remember you were kind of like, I'm just getting out of this conversation.
This guy has too many fucking educational advantages over me for me to even try to debate with him.
But don't you think that, like the reader who just wrote in saying that we don't have any official credentials, but that's the necessary part, do you think that we fulfill that void, the uneducated but still slightly interesting void?
I hope so. I mean, I'm sure there are other people out there that do the same thing, but I think we are the most proud of our ignorance, or at least in our lack of educational anythings. So, you know, we try to make it a point of saying that so long as you basically follow the tenets of skepticism and common sense, you're generally good.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you don't need, I think this is the really important lesson here, is you really don't need to have a PhD or doctorate in anything for you to feel satisfied that you are doing it right. You know, that at least you have a skeptical mind, that you do not accept claims that are just made bold-faced and without fucking any evidence. You're like, no, this is false. I can see right through it. And maybe that's the thing where people who would otherwise be very skeptical and are probably right in their skepticism are constantly told by other people, probably even people with degrees in their own specific nonsense, like somebody with a doctorate of theology, that they must inherently be wrong or ignorant, or that they can't debate with intelligent design and so on and so forth because they don't have formal education. I will tell you something. It does not require a great deal of education to be able to see through nonsense and bullshit. For the most part, you see through this all the time. I mean, how often do we reject claims from people because they just sound utterly ludicrous? You know, if you buy a car and somebody tells you that it flies, I'm pretty sure you're going to be like, I don't think so, buddy. Or at the very least, you're like, show me some fucking proof, and then maybe I'll acquiesce. But, yeah, we give hope. We give hope because we're just as stupid as the rest of everybody else. But at least we're not quite as stupid as people who believe in tremendously ludicrous things. So I think we can feel proud of that. Now, I don't know if you paid any attention to this, but a couple of days ago, I got an email from a new fan who had just started listening to the show that said that they were finding it rather difficult to tell their friends, their religious friends, about the show because of the amount of swearing that goes on. I don't know if you read this. Did you see this on the show?
This has come up a couple of times in the past before. We used to get that quite a bit, and then people kind of realized, oh, they're not going to stop, so then they stopped. But I guess new people are still coming in, and, you know, I will admit that every so often we go from, because I don't mind the swearing so long as we carefully craft the times where we use swearing to emphasize things, but every so often it really does become our, especially when you get kind of angry. Next thing you know, it's this fucking this and fucking that, and God fuck damn shit, and it's just, yeah, it's not as powerful as a well-placed cuss.
I will admit, because I mean, I put up the post and I had Stephen Fry, that most people who listen to this show are probably familiar with. If you're not, do a Google search for a little bit of Fry and Laurie, and you'll know who this guy is. But he had basically put out a video for his 50th birthday, talking about the joys of swearing. So I put up this video and I said, you know, please, people, stop asking me to stop swearing, because it's just not going to happen. It's not going to happen for a few reasons. Number one is obviously that's just part of my vernacular. Anybody who knows me knows that I swear. All right, it happens. Sometimes I can try to prevent it. I mean, you know, whenever your parents came down, they always had to have, like, when I was living with you, they always had to have an agreement, which is like, Jacob, can you not swear for like a whole week? While we are down here with family members who are easily shocked by your very colorful language.
Well, you know, those family members were 11 and 13 years old, so.
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, one of the questions of the people who had responded rather negatively to me telling them to please leave me alone was, like, do you talk like that to your cousins or to young children and so on and so forth? And here's the part that I just want to say, because, I mean, I can understand how some people might be like, oh, I feel uncomfortable sometimes when I play your show because you'll say the word fuck, and all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I feel embarrassed, or I feel very uncomfortable, and blah, blah. And I'm like, look, if you feel that if you swear near a young adult that you're doing something to maybe damage their minds or that you're going to only encourage them to swear, I would say that you have never hung out with prepubescent or adolescents of your entire fucking life. If you do not understand or realize that they use swearing more often than you can possibly imagine, you're naive. You're a very naive person, okay? Maybe there are those kids that are just sort of picturesque, Norman Rockwell-like children who don't swear ever and have this sort of Mormon etiquette. But for the most part, if you've ever just gone to a playground, you will hear them swear like sailors, and it's just something you got to get used to. Do I swear in front of my cousins? Yes. Why? Because they know all the swear words. It's not new to them. And if I feel to some degree like, I should probably tone it down, again, I think that the problem, or maybe this is the issue with strong language, is that we tend to kind of give it a little bit too much emphasis and strength. Don't you feel like to some degree, like all of a sudden if you're just like, well, these are words that are forbidden, what is more enticing than a forbidden fruit, I ask you? Huh? Like, what kid who wants to be rebellious will not swear? I almost think that if I swear as a non-rebellious entity, because let's face it, I mean, you see me as a kid and you probably think I'm just some, you know, straight-edge bureaucrat because of the way that I look, because I dress like a nerd. There's nothing more rebellious for kids than swearing. And I'm like, I think that that's something that we should do away with. Strong language exists. Let's get over ourselves. And let's make sure that the one thing that is the most important isn't the way that you say something, is what you say. Maybe. Just maybe. And if I get really colorful occasionally, let me remind everyone that listens to the show what I talk about. In the next subject that we're going to have you talking about, I'm talking about the Catholic Church conspiring to kidnap babies. If I'm going to use the F word or the S word or the C word, it's probably because I've gone on a mad tangent because I'm so angry about what's happening. I'm sorry that I'm angry, everybody. These rants normally just come out of me. There's nothing I can do. There will be swearing. I would apologize, but I'm not the type to apologize. So, fuck off. I'm a nice man, aren't I?
Very nice. Yep. So let's get into that religion stuff.
Yeah, let's get into the religion stuff. It's going to be a bit of a short show, but a good one. The first one is just something that a fan sent over, and at first, I swear to you, I did not actually think this was serious. I just thought it was like, once in a while, you know, sometimes you read a piece of news and you think it's just an exaggeration. I mean, I suppose to some degree, anytime the Catholic Church comes into the spotlight having done some other evil, you tell yourself, there's no way they could have gotten away with this. Somebody must have done something. This can't be real. But this fan had the foresight of sending me 5 independent links all about the same story, which I just sort of, you know, read through and devoured. And sure enough, this is true. And the story is this, that for a period of about 50 years or more, it's basically since the 1940s, in Spain, the government of Francisco Franco, who was basically a fascist dictator, conspired with the Catholic Church, who ran all the hospitals, to kidnap babies. So here's what they would do. If you were a single mother or a mother of one of Franco's enemies, they would inform the mother after delivery that the baby had died. They would then squirrel the baby away, give it up for adoption, raise it themselves, or more often than not, sell them to families that could not have babies of their own. And this continued even past 1975, which is when Francisco Franco died. No one's quite sure how long this went on. If you ask anyone how many babies in all were stolen, because, I mean, is there any other better way to describe it? Estimates range from about 30,000 to 300,000 in the period of over 50 years. I'm a little bit reticent to accept the 300,000 because I did a calculation, and 300,000 kids in that period of 50 years, that would be 16 babies a day would have been sort of stolen. And I'm like, I don't even see how that's possible. But I do believe the 30,000, which places it about 1.6 kids every day. So about almost 2 kids a day would be stolen. And this went on for a long time. And the crazy thing is it went on long after Franco died. Because, as you might imagine, the Catholic Church was like, well, we don't want single mothers raising babies, so we're going to give them to Catholic families or proper families in order for the baby not to be screwed up. Now, there's a bunch of families of about 261 children who believe that they were part of this, let's say, massive conspiracy that wanted the government to investigate. Here's the problem, though. After the Franco's death, and essentially, I think in 1978 is when they adopted a democratic constitution, in doing so, they decided that they were going to let bygones be bygones. So what that means was they didn't want to incarcerate anyone, and you know how it is, right? Government officials were probably still in power. Nobody wanted to be embarrassed saying, hey, I've been working with fascists for over 50 years, so... They just said, okay, well, we don't give a shit anymore. And they told all of those families that essentially they had to conduct their own investigation. So the government has essentially said, no, we don't want to investigate this crime.
Lovely.
Mm-hmm. So it's difficult to ascertain exactly how many kids have been kidnapped. And I really like, I don't know if you were watching the Bill Maher a couple of weeks ago, where he was talking about the scandal in Philadelphia. Are you familiar with the scandal in Philadelphia that occurred recently?
That's the most recent one that just kind of blended into all the others. Because, Boston, Philadelphia, just cities. it doesn't even seem like a new one. You know, every time you hear about a new one, I think people are thinking that they're just rehearing about an old one and not realizing that, nope, there's a couple other 100 kids in another American city.
Yeah.
It just happens.
Well,
they just keep on rolling them out.
The the scandal in Philadelphia involves roughly about 100 suspected pedophiles that are still in the employ of the Catholic Church, and about 60 of them, the reason they're still employed is actually because the statute of limitation on rape has expired, so they can actually prosecute these fuckwads. And yet, they're still actually working. They're still employed. So Bill Maher was suggesting that the problem that we have really in society right now is that we've become so accustomed to the abuses of religion that we just don't, we're not even surprised anymore. So if I tell you that the Spanish Catholic Church conspired for maybe 60 years in kidnapping babies, what does that mean? Is anyone going to do anything about it? I mean, what the fuck are we supposed to do? At what point do you decide, okay, well, child rape is pretty bad, baby kidnapping is pretty bad. I'm going to ask you this question. What is it that the Catholic Church needs to do before everyone just says, that's enough? Is that even possible? Because they've been getting away with murder forever. So I want everybody to just think about
that. Well, you know, maybe if the Pope was somehow tied to some of these child rapes in some way, then maybe somebody would give a shit. Maybe.
Yeah, not so much. Not even. And maybe if the Pope had once belonged to a fascist organization that was responsible for the murder of millions of Jews.
I give him a pass on that one. Everybody in Germany was a Hitler youth, so...
You want to give him a pass on that one? That's, I'm not gonna.
That's okay. You don't have to, but I'm just saying. I'm gonna throw in on his end and say, you know, you live in a fascist country, and yeah, you're gonna join the fascist Boy Scouts. I'll give you a pass on that one.
Yeah, but you know what? That's again what happened in Spain, where they're like, oh, so you participated in a fascist government? Don't worry about it. I would say at the very least, if you're part of that organization, I'm like, sorry, but that pretty much bars you from every important office. And just get over it. Just get over that fact, because you know your hands are covered in blood, regardless of what you do. I mean, it should matter what you did in your life. You don't get a reset button. And if you do, even if you do, which I guess he did, you should have a special amount of scrutiny towards your own actions, because you were responsible, at least in a very small part, but still responsible for propagating a mass evil. And you just don't get to walk away from that shit. This is the thing that annoys me the most, where you're like, oh, well, it happened in your youthful indiscretion, don't worry about it. Well, if we're going to take that attitude, shouldn't they be held more accountable in the future, saying, well, that's the price you have to pay? If you get a get out of jail free card once, I would say that when your hands get caught in the cookie jar again, then maybe you should be fucking doubly slapped. Just a thought.
Yeah, not a bad idea.
Okay, let's move on, because there's not much else to say about that topic. Here's something that really I found interesting. It didn't get a lot of media coverage, as far as I'm concerned, because of how crazy it is. And now, you might remember Al-Qaeda for 9/11 and a variety of other crimes, but now, on their resume, they can add something even more fascinating, which is the fact that they've published the first issue of a woman's magazine called Al-Shamika, which basically means the majestic woman. And this is a magazine that basically targets jihadist women. Maybe that's the best way that I can describe it. There's two surprising things about this magazine. One is its existence, because I don't even understand how a terrorist organization that refuses to allow women to be educated can actually publish a magazine which they are supposed to read. But also the fact that it is surprisingly well crafted. I don't know if you saw the link that I put up. This is in the notes. The show notes, by the way. You can go check this out. But there's actually a PDF of the entire magazine.
Well, that's the way that it gets distributed, because that's the interesting thing about what Al-Qaeda is doing right now, is that this isn't the first magazine that they've done. They actually had released, like, I think it was 6 or 7 months ago, everybody was talking because Al-Qaeda released their first general magazine. And when you think about it just on its face, the idea of a terrorist organization putting together basically what is a like a terrorist Mary Claire or a terrorist fucking Today. The terrorist
Cosmo,
hello.
Terrorist Cosmo.
Exactly. It's hilarious on its face, and all of these get distributed via like PDF across Muslim message boards and stuff like that. They're very interesting to look at. Very interesting.
Well, I was very surprised by just the degree of knowledge of whoever put it together, because they still had some you know, graphic awareness. I'm like, how do you apply for this job exactly? You know, like, well, I studied graphic design at this school, and I was rather disheartened. So I joined Al-Qaeda and did graphic design for that organization. I wonder if you can actually put that on a resume. Now I'm going to read you five of the articles, the titles of the articles that I thought were interesting. We'll talk about that, and then I'll give you my five suggestions for future articles, which if they don't make, I'll actually be surprised, honestly. Okay, so the first article was called Sharia Law as it applies to you.
A.K.A., I suppose, if you break it, we break you.
If you break it, you will be honor killed or possibly raped before. Who knows? So this is probably a pretty important article, especially if you live in any place where Al-Qaeda is or the Taliban is reigning supreme. Because this is probably, you just should know this. Because it's going to apply to you whether you want to or not. Number two is meeting with a jihad wife. So this is an interview with the wife of someone who had martyred themselves for some imaginary god.
So that's kind of like the rah-rah, my husband killed himself and I'm so proud of him and everything is awesome and don't worry about it, people will take care of you afterwards if that's what happens type thing?
Well, you know, we referred to this as the sort of terrorist Cosmo. And in Cosmo, you'll find plenty of articles be like, oh, my husband this, or my husband that, or marrying a fireman, or the, you know, if your husband has a really dangerous job, you're probably going to have an article in Cosmo about, you know, how you deal with this relationship, right? I'm assuming?
No, not really. Cosmo is usually much more vapid than that.
Okay, fine. Well, all right, not Cosmo. You said Claire or something like that. I mean,
well, Mary Claire?
I don't know what other people fucking read. I mean, do you read women's magazines? I find them insipid, really, on almost all levels.
It always breaks my heart a little bit when I see, like, a woman reading. And you know what? It's not completely right, because obviously a lot of women's fashion magazines, you know, if you read it for that and you want to get information on that, then that would be the place to go for it, and there's nothing wrong with it. But it's just some of those magazines with their... I mean, obviously we're making fun of Al-Qaeda's table of contents, but we could easily go over to a Cosmo and read through that and just feel sick for the state of feminism today.
Yeah. Well, I was reading a People's magazine just the other day, and the best way that I can describe it is it's a form of relationship porn. Maybe that's the best way to say it, because every single page, almost without exception, was either about how to get in a relationship, how to get out of relationships, the relationships of others, and tricks in relationships that you need to know. But it's centered around this whole thing, and I'm like, this is just women having, or select few, being exploited in regards to their extreme interest in relationships. But they're without merit. I mean, who cares who Jake Gyllenhaal is dating? Okay? Who cares? If you care, something is wrong with you. Pick up something to educate yourself. Forget the relationship porn. It is just as bad as me reading a magazine about a bunch of threesomes or things like that would interest most men. Dirty, you know, insidious affairs and things like that. But how is it any different? There's no information in these magazines that extend to the real world. It is just relationship porn. Okay, so the third article, not very different from the second, is marrying a jihadist. So I think the article probably begins, well, you probably want to marry him before he commits his jihad, because otherwise he's bits and pieces and there's not much left of the groom. So, presumably, this is sort of like, here are the key features that you need to know in terms of marrying a jihadist. The first one is that he will die. And I don't know if you need to know anything else. Because he's about to kill himself. The fourth article is called The Female Martyr.
Man, so they really laser focus in on you know, like Article 1, Sharia law, as far as how why you should dedicate yourself to killing the infidels. And then the second one is, here's a jihadi wife, marry a jihadist, be a jihadist.
Pretty much.
It's a nice little rolling rock down that hill of terrorism.
I don't even know what they're going to follow this up with. But here's the interesting thing about the female martyr. I don't know if many of you remember listening to the podcast, one of the older shows that we did, where we talked about how actually one of the techniques that Al-Qaeda uses to try to recruit female jihadists. What they do is essentially they have roving bands of young men whose sole purpose it is to rape women. Because if you rape a very devout woman, you can afterwards, after she has been soiled and, you know, dishonored and so on and so forth, it's actually pretty easy to convince her to kill herself in order to restore her honor. Of course, she doesn't necessarily know that the men who raped her were actually part of this whole jihadist organization. She really doesn't need to know this. It's not important. It's just part of the strategy. So these are double victims. These are women who have been raped and then convinced to blow themselves up with ball bearings and C4 to kill innocent individuals. Is there a better example of tragedy? I can't think of one. This is essentially the most human misery that you can pack in one fucking sentence. Woman gets raped by jihadists in order to convince her to be a jihadist herself.
I don't know. Maybe those, like, child soldiers in Africa who have to, like, eat their parents and then they get forced to fight for the people who made them eat their parents. That's pretty horrific, too. But, you know.
Yeah, but they get a second chance.
The fact that it's neck and neck shows how horrific it is.
Yeah, it's neck and neck. But like I said, I mean, some of those kids, some of those child soldiers can still be rescued. You can't get rescued when you're a pile of meat laying about you in a 50 feet radius. There is no sort of turning back. I mean, that for me is the true tragedy of this, because this a woman who's raped and convinced to kill herself and who does it, that's it. That is sort of like the chapter of your life has been written. I was raped and then convinced to wear this vest and I murdered a whole bunch of individuals. Yay me. This is the height of tragedy. This is insane. All right, let's go to the fifth article, which is your house is your castle. Okay, if you are a Muslim woman in a place where this magazine is probably the only thing that you can read, yeah, your house is your castle in the same way that a thief has home as his castle. That sure, you can clean it up, but you're ultimately not the fucking lord of this castle. It's your castle in the same way that the servants who have to scrub the floor with a toothbrush live in a castle. It's like, congratulations on living in a castle. Way to go.
So, like, enjoy it because you're going to be spending a lot of time in there.
Exactly. There's no way for you to leave, pretty much. So make the best of it. Okay, I have five suggestions for future articles, and I bet you real money that one of these is going to be an actual article. And if it does, somebody should, you know, give me money for being so good at being able to predict this. So my number one choice, my number five choice for articles is how to turn rape into opportunity, the joy of martyrdom.
We've already covered that one pretty much. Right.
We've covered that one. Okay, number four is 10 tips on how to be more submissive. How do you like that one? They include tips like shut the fuck up and do what you're told, bitch. Number three is honor killings made easy. So all that requires is that you get real drunk, get your sons to come on down and murder your daughter for having looked at a man.
Do you think that they're going to have honor killings made easy for people in the Western world? Because I've noticed that at the very least, we generally arrest and try most of the people doing the honor killings over here, but you know, Eastern Europe further on, it gets a little bit harder. So you'd have to have two kind of, like, if there was like an American edition that teaches you how to lie to the cops and stuff like that.
Oh, man, you don't even need to know how to do that. The communities are fucking experts at being able to sort of, like, be very elusive towards the cop, provide no information, and essentially just deceive them. This, you don't need a magazine article for. Although I think that the Honor Killings Made Easy article would probably tell you the best ways to actually kill someone, and how to bury the evidence and so on and so forth.
And like the best excuse, which would be like, Alaya went back to Yemen. good luck proving or disproving that.
She's on a pilgrimage to Mecca. Who knows what happened over there, though. My number two choice is burqa fashion. Black is the new black. And finally, number one choice is infabulations for beginners. So if you don't know what infabulations is, that's female circumcision.
Jesus Christ. You know, for a word that has fabulous almost inside of it, that's probably the most unfabulous thing ever.
Well, to be fair, actually, infabulation is when you not only circumcise the vagina, but you sew it shut with, you know, whatever you can find to sew it. And yeah.
So it's the full Monty.
It's the full Monty. And just to put this in perspective, now, it's not like they use in infabulation some kind of surgical, you know, grade stuff. They'll use, like, whatever fucking is available. And as you might imagine, these things get infected, and anything infected smells like the fucking Dickens. And of course, and this is probably the most important thing, is that once a woman is infabulated and she's having her wedding night, the most magical night in the world, the male has to use his penis to break through that barrier. So that's a good time is had by all. And trust me when I say that the bedsheet, ceremonial bedsheet, which is later displayed to everyone, by the way, has to be covered in blood. This is important. Everyone's like, yay, she bled out of her vagina when he forced himself upon her. Honor was had by all. Truly, this is a fucking advanced society that we should emulate.
They're equal in every way.
I think, you know what, though, making this top 10 suggestion, I'm like, I actually think that I should write an article for, you know, Alshamika, because I just feel like I know what kind of articles would really sort of, like, catch on. Do you think that they would pay me, like, one of those, you know, freelancing fees? Do you think I can make money?
It would be kind of interesting if you could go onto some of the boards pretending to be into it and giving them some tongue-in-cheek articles that they just couldn't tell the difference. It would put Poe's Law into a whole new light if you were writing articles for extremely religious people that were in truth parodies, but they didn't realize it.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. If you read Alshamika and you see somebody called Jihad Jake, that's me. That's me, baby. Okay, so before we end the show, this is it's a fairly short show, but hopefully it was a good one. I want to remind everybody that although normally I ask everyone or tell everyone that we have a bonus show and that we entice people to become members, because the last 2 months have been pretty scarce in terms of the bonus shows, I'm telling everybody, wait until the month of April when we start our regular two shows a week before you become a member. So even if you were thinking about it, just hold on for that. I'm waiting until my internet is better. I don't want you to feel as though you're not getting your fair share of it. And again, I mean, I'm sorry for the inconvenience. It's really not something that I had assumed would be a problem. I mean, I thought, you know, you get down to DR, and sure, maybe the internet's not that good, but you can maybe pay some extra. I was paying 1,000 pesos, which is about $40 more per month in an attempt to get faster internet, and it doesn't do shit. So unfortunately, I was not able to compensate for that. I think I'll be more aware of this on my future travels as I continue to travel the globe trying to be a bullshit jet setter. But yeah, the internet, now I realize, is my home, and I cannot live without my home. If that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, next week you'll be back, and everything will be generally back to normal. So you'll be back home on the net, where you belong, not out there surfing and enjoying yourself. A different kind of surfing, a more boring kind of surfing, hyperlink surfing.
Hey, it's not that boring. It's just that you don't get sunburns. You just get your eyes just start to burn. That's the only difference. But I will come back wiser, definitely more tanned, but I feel wiser. And the one thing that I have learned definitely from living in a far more religious country, because the amount of times that, you know, I was talking to people that are all about Dios, which is, you know, God in Spanish, is rather staggering. In fact, I usually don't tell people what I do for a living, because I'm just afraid that they're going to fucking stone me or something like that. You know what I mean?
That's a good idea. I mean, why make enemies, right?
Yeah, yeah. And people here are pretty friendly. I just don't want them to sort of, like, have any reason or excuse to hate my guts. But that for me was sort of like a pretty vital lesson. And the other problem, too, is that even if I told them what I did, I can't speak enough Spanish to try to debate with them, so they would have the upper hand. They could say something incomprehensible, and I'd be like, I just can't fucking debate here, so I've given up. I cannot convert anyone in the DR. It's not going to happen. All right, well, with that, I'd like to say thanks to everybody who already is a contributing member, and my name is Jacob Fortan.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good Atheist Day, everybody.